Chapter 12. 39 Steps. By morning, I was at the Griffin Hotel in Bradgate. A small British warship was anchored a few miles to the south. Scaife, who had been in the Navy, knew the name of the ship and its captain, and we sent a telegram to Sir Walter giving him the information. Then we got a key for the gates of all the sets of stairs on the rough and counted the steps on each set. 42, 21, 34, 35, 47, 39, counted Scaife. 39? I almost shouted. We had found the house with 39 steps. We hurried back to town and sent a telegram to McGillivray asking for 6 men to come and help us capture the spies. Then Scaife went to find out about the house with the 39 steps. He came back with news. The house is called Trafalgar Lodge. It belongs to a retired gentleman, Mr. Appleton, who uses it as a holiday home and has been there all this week. I went to the house, pretending to be selling brushes. There are 3 servants, and I have seen them all. They all seem to be perfectly ordinary local people, Scaife reported. I borrowed Scaife's telescope and went for a walk on the cliffs above the villas. I saw Trafalgar Lodge, with a tennis court in the back garden and a set of stairs leading down to the beach. A large British flag hung on a pole outside the house. With the telescope, I saw an ordinary-looking old man leave the house and walk along the cliff. He sat down on one of the seats facing the sea and began to read. From time to time, he put down his book and looked out to sea with a pair of binoculars. He looked at the warship for a long time. When he returned to his house, I went back to the hotel to have lunch. After lunch, I sat on the porch of the hotel and watched a yacht come up from the south and anchor opposite the rough. Scaife and I hurried down to the beach and hired a boat to take us fishing. We caught a lot of fish, and then, at about 4 o'clock, I asked the boatman to take us to the yacht. It was called the Ariadne, and the sailors that we spoke to answered in perfect English. An officer came and spoke to us, also in English. But I could see by his clothes and haircut that he was not English, but probably German. I began to feel more certain about my guess that we had found the right place, but I was very worried that the Black Stone might have changed their plans. Back at the hotel, I met the commander of the warship, and we explained our plan to him. After that, I decided to watch Trafalgar Lodge for an hour or two. I found a place where I could sit and watch the house without being seen. 2 men were playing tennis. One was the man with the binoculars I had seen before. They both looked typically English and very innocent, not at all like the men who had hunted me on the moor, except that one was old and one very young and blonde. They were also in a house with 39 steps which went down to a beach, exactly where I expected the Black Stone to be according to Scudder's notebook. Soon, a tall, dark-haired man arrived, carrying golf clubs, and they all went into the house, laughing and joking. What if they really were just 3 English gentlemen having a sports weekend? How could I be sure that they were the Black Stone and not the typical Englishman they seemed to be? But I had to continue, even if there was a possibility that I was wrong, even if they laughed at me. I had to take the chance. Suddenly, I remembered what my old army friend Peter Pienaar from Rhodesia used to say about disguise. He said the best disguise was to really believe that you were the person that you were pretending to be. I understood that I was dealing with professional spies who were able to believe completely in the roles that they were playing. It was now almost 8 o'clock, and I went back to give Scaife his instructions. The men McGillivray had sent in answer to Scaife's telegram had arrived, and I told Scaife to put them in position in the garden around the house. I didn't feel hungry, so instead went for a walk round the deserted golf course, and then along the path above the beach. Everything was so tranquil and normal that I began to have doubts again. It was now 9:30, and time for me to proceed with my part of the plan. I opened the gate at Trafalgar Lodge and rang the bell. A servant opened the door, and I asked to see Mr. Appleton. When I walked into the house, I was even less sure of myself than I had been before. The whole house looked so ordinary and typically English. I walked into the dining room. The three men were sitting at the table, looking at me calmly. "Did you want to see me?" the old man asked. "We've met before, and I think you know why I'm here," I answered. "I'm sorry. My memory isn't very good," said the old man. "I'm afraid that I don't know who you are or what you want." "My name is Richard Hannay, and I've come to tell you three gentlemen that you're all under arrest for the murder of Franklin Scudder in London on May the 23rd, I said. "That was the Portland Place murder, wasn't it? I read about it." "You must be crazy, sir. Where do you come from?" asked the tall, dark-haired man. "From Scotland Yard, and I've got authorization to arrest you," I answered. The three men looked genuinely surprised and confused. "Don't worry, Uncle. There has been some ridiculous mistake, but we can prove our innocence," said the young blonde man. "I was out of the country at the time of the murder, and Bob here was in hospital. You were in London, Uncle. But can you remember what you were doing?" "Of course. That was the day after Agatha's wedding. What was I doing? Ah, yes, I had dinner at a fish restaurant, and the fish made me ill," said the old man. "Well, this will make a good story to tell at the club," laughed the young blonde man. It was difficult for me to believe that they were acting, but I continued. The light from the candles on the table didn't allow me to see their faces very well, so I walked to the door and turned on the electric light over the table. I stared at their faces. I still could not be completely sure that these were the men that I had seen before, and there were so many pictures and sports trophies that belonged to Appleton on the walls that I continued to doubt myself. "You really must stop this ridiculous behaviour now," said the old man. But I shook my head. I had to continue. I had no choice. "Well, in the meantime, I suggest that we have a game of bridge. Mr. Hannay can be the fourth player while he thinks things over," said the tall, dark-haired man they had called Bob. I accepted the invitation like a man in a dream and followed the men into the living room. I thought it would help pass the time. I usually play bridge well, but I played very badly that night. They could all see that I wasn't sure of myself, and they became even more relaxed. The clock in the room struck 10 o'clock. Suddenly I noticed something. The old man was tapping his fingers on his knee. The old man at the farmhouse had made the same movement. My doubts disappeared, and it was as if I could see them all clearly as they really were. The tall, dark-haired man was probably the murderer who had killed Scudder. The young blonde man had probably acted the part of the First Lord the previous night. He was certainly a superb actor. Appleton was the old man at the farmhouse, the leader of the Black Stone. I continued playing bridge, but my heart was now so full of hate that I didn't know how much longer I could bear to be in their company. "Bob, look at the time. You'll miss your train," said the old man to the tall, dark-haired man. "Bob has to go to town tonight," he said, turning to me. I looked at the clock. It was almost 10:30. "I'm afraid he'll have to cancel his trip," I said. "My men are here to arrest you. The house is surrounded." "Oh, no, this is ridiculous," said the young blonde man. But for the first time I heard doubt in his voice. "That's enough. My nephew is leaving now, Mr. Hannay," said the old man. Was I imagining it, or had I heard some doubt in his voice? I must have, because as I looked at him, he half covered his eyes just like a falcon in the frightening way I remembered so well. I blew my whistle. Suddenly all the lights went out, and the old man grabbed me and held me so that I couldn't reach my gun. "Quick, France!" someone cried in German. "The boat! The boat!" As the person spoke, Scaife and two policemen came running into the dark house and put handcuffs on the young blonde man. Franz, the tall, dark-haired man, jumped through the window and over the low fence before Scaife's men in the garden could catch him. He ran down the steps to the beach. I broke free, grabbed the old man and held his arms behind his back. But suddenly he got loose and threw himself against the wall. There was a sound as if a lever had been pulled. I heard a noise far below the ground, and then through the window I saw smoke and dust coming from where the set of steps had been. The steps had disappeared, and Scaife's men could not follow Franz. At the same time, I heard the sound of a motorboat moving away from the beach. The old man was looking at me with shining eyes.
"He is safe! You cannot follow in time! The Black Stone has won!"
he shouted. As the handcuffs were put on his wrists, I said my last words to him. "I have to tell you that the yacht Ariadne was captured by a British warship an hour ago. Your man, Franz, will find the yacht safely in our hands." 3 weeks later, we were at war. I joined the British Army during the first week of the war, and because of my experience in South Africa and Rhodesia, I was made a captain immediately. But I still think that I had done my best service for Britain before I put on army uniform.